British Prime Minister Theresa May is fighting for her job. She spoke in the House of Commons ahead of a no-confidence vote today over her plan for Brexit.
The public voted to leave the EU. They want us to secure a deal that delivers on that result. And we shouldn't risk handing control of the Brexit negotiations to opposition MPs in Parliament, because that would mean risking delaying Brexit or even stopping Brexit.
Joining us now is David Lammy, a member of Parliament from the opposition Labour Party. David Lammy, welcome to Here and Now.
Hi, great to be with you.
And let's just be clear before we get into this conversation about your point of view. You, if you had your druthers, you would just not Brexit at all, right?
I've always believed that the best place for the United Kingdom to be is within the European Union. I recognize that there have been concerns about the sovereignty of the UK and some of the bureaucracy of the European Union, but ultimately, I, like many Brits, and certainly the 48% that voted Remain, believe that whilst there are issues with the European Union, Britain is better off with a seat at the table, leading from the front and trying to reform the European Union, not outside it.
So what should happen now? Should Prime Minister May keep her job and keep trying to work out a deal, or should she go?
Well, we're certainly at a moment of national crisis in the UK that I've never seen in our history. We're now in a situation where the crisis is within the Conservative political party. We will see in the next few hours whether Theresa May keeps her job. My sense is that she will, in fact, remain as leader of the Conservative Party, having spoken to several Conservative MPs over the last few hours, but she will be incredibly weakened. She still has to get her deal through Parliament in the coming weeks. I suspect that she will still not be able to get her deal through Parliament. So ultimately, in our system, when politics is stuck, the order of the day is you hand the issue back to the people, either in the form of a general election or, in this case, a referendum on the issue of staying in the European Union or accepting Theresa May's deal.
So you think there should be, or there will be, a second referendum on Brexit?
Well, the difficulty is when there was this referendum campaign, a whole load of things were said by those that wanted to leave the European Union, most of which could never be delivered, and certainly not delivered without considerable pain. So there is no configuration of a deal that can easily get through the UK Parliament. And just to explain this to an American audience, if you want to leave with a hard Brexit, just a sort of trade deal and nothing else with the European Union, similar to the sort of trade deal that Canada has with the European Union,
right,
then you're going to create a hard border in Northern Ireland and go back to the bad old days in Northern Ireland. And you're going to have quite a lot of turbulence in our trade. Our trade at the moment within the single market is frictionless. So there are lots of parliamentarians that won't accept that. If you go for a softer Brexit, something more like the relationship that Norway has with the European Union, then you're into a situation where free movement more or less continues across Europe, and that was a big issue for those who wanted to leave in terms of immigration, and quite a lot of people will not accept that. So the problem here is this is a curate's egg. It's very hard to get a Brexit that can command a majority in the House of Commons and hasn't got enemies, and for all of those reasons, I think ultimately this will have to be settled by the British public in a second referendum where they can instruct politicians, this is what we want you to do. And I hope that that instruction is to remain within the European Union.
But we were just in the UK and we did several broadcasts about Brexit. And I spoke to people around the country who said they would feel betrayed if there were a second referendum, because the first referendum was not billed as best of three. That was it. And that's what people wanted.
I honestly think that when we had the referendum, quite a lot of British people will tell you they weren't sure what they were voting for. The average member of the British public, and similarly to the average member of the American British public, does not know the detail of a trade issue. Nevertheless, we've now had, for the last 2.5 years, a very heated debate, a debate that it would have been nice if we'd had for the last 30 years about our relationship with Europe, I think the British public are more informed, but more importantly, they can vote on something that's in front of them. You've got Theresa May's deal and all that's been said about it, and you have what you know already, which is our relationship with the European Union within the European Union. Those are tangible things that the British public can choose to go for or not. And that's why I think that that this people's vote, as we're calling it, this second referendum, is very different to the last.
But why isn't your leader, Jeremy Corbyn, saying what you're saying, that there should be a second referendum?
Well, it's true to say that there are splits in both parties, and there have been historically splits in the Labour Party. You know, some of the seats in the industrial north of Britain voted Leave. These are areas of the country that haven't seen a pickup after the 2008 crash. Areas that have not recovered from some of the changes that were made under Margaret Thatcher, areas that have struggled in the last 8 years with austerity. Now, my view is that for those areas of the country, don't blame the European Union, which was actually sometimes delivering funds to those areas to ease the pain. Blame domestic politics that is responsible for that. And that's why we're now seeing Northern MPs in the northeast of the country, up by places like Newcastle, Darlington, Hartlepool, also talking about having a people's vote and a second referendum, because they're listening to manufacturers, they're listening to big employers, some of the car manufacturers and others, who are saying, look, I'm afraid we're going to pull out if Britain goes forward with this.
I just want to ask you one more thing. Your speech in the House of Commons the other day went viral. And here's one of the things that you said in that speech. Let's listen.
At its worst, the British Empire was exploitation and subjugation, moral superiority that led to putting humans in shackles, the oppression of black and brown people because this country thought it knew best. Those countries once coloured pink on the globe were not won in negotiations. They were taken by force. Today, we need to build a new image of Britain, one that brings this country together after years of division.
Now, one of the things that our listeners cannot see is that you yourself are black, and you made that comparison between what you're seeing right now with Brexit and the colonial past of Britain. What do you think is the connection there between the two?
There are two aspects to this point. The first is it's absolutely clear that people like Nigel Farage, who led the UKIP party and has in part been responsible for this decision to Brexit, want to recreate something they call Empire 2.0. It is an idea that harks back to Britain's colonial past, in which they seem to have forgotten that Britain took those countries that were pink on the map by force, not by negotiation. And during that period, some terrible things were done that involved slavery and enslaved people and involved the subjugation of lots of colonial people across the globe. And indeed, there are countries like the United States that fought off the Brits and said, no, thank you, we want to go our own way.
Right.
So it's a conceit to give the idea that somehow Britain can recreate this, because Britain surely can't recreate this. When you go to negotiate with the Indians, they will remind you of that sorry period in which their country was being run from London. I think the second point to this is that Britain sometimes tells itself a story that is a story of winning the Second World War, almost as if we sort of stood alone in the darkest hour. And that is not, in fact, right. The Americans helped us considerably and bankrolled us, actually, for years after the Second World War, and lots of Commonwealth soldiers from places like India, the Caribbean, but also New Zealand, Australia, Canada, assisted us in that Second World War enterprise. So we were never a sovereign state doing it entirely on our own. It was always through key alliances and key diplomacy. Well, that is what the European Union is. That is why what it was forged. It was forged in part to keep peace in the continent of Europe. And of course, as we watch around the world, as right-wing forces dominate across the world and hard-right forces dominate, it is very, very worrying that this energy of populism loses that hope of peace that forged the European Union. The European Union is imperfect, like any democracy. It's imperfect, and there are ways in which it does need reform. But my God, let us not forget that it was forged out of the seat of terrible conflict, two conflicts in the 20th century that cost millions of lives, American lives, British lives, and lives across the globe. And I worry a lot that some in the United Kingdom have lost sight of that wonderful, audacious vision, as imperfect as it was.
That is David Lammy, a member of the British Parliament in the opposition Labour Party. Mr. Lammy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And you can watch the full video of David Lammy's speech in the House of Commons, the one that went viral. It's at hereandnow.org.